This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Paul Durham of Exeter specializes in telling lies to children. That's how he frequently describes his job as a writer of fictional tales of the adventures of Rye O'Chanter, a young girl from the town of Drowning who happens to be the daughter of a man known as Harmless, the High Chieftain of the Luck Uglies. Who are the Luck Uglies? Paul Durham joins me now to talk about them. His third book in the Luck Ugly series, Rise of the Ragged Clover, was published earlier this year. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks for having me, Peter. It's great to be here.
So tell us, who are the Luck Uglies?
Who are the Luck Uglies? Isn't that a great question? Well, it depends on who you ask. Some people would call them villains. Some people, I suppose, might call them heroes. Some people would say they're ghosts and they don't exist at all anymore. But really, the Luck Uglies are a secret society of outlaws who inhabit this village of Drowning. And when the series opens, nobody has seen or heard from these outlaws for 10 years. They've been exiled by the local Earl, who's the landowner, the baron of the community, and people only whisper about them. They're sort of like ghosts or boogeymen that scare kids at night.
What inspired your writing this kind of story?
You know, I started out trying to write for adults. I tried to be an adult author for many, many years. I had a literary agent. I like to say I got rejected by every major publisher in Manhattan, which unfortunately is true. I did get rejected by every major publisher. And I kind of got so discouraged, like a lot of aspiring authors do, that for a while I gave up writing altogether. And then going back about maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we were coming up on the holidays, and I asked my oldest daughter, who I think was 7 or 8 at the time, what she might like as a gift. And she said, "Dad, you know what? Could you write me a story, one that we could read together?" And I had to take a step back and scratch my head, because I'd always written crime fiction. So it's full of, a little bit of violence and maybe some language that wouldn't be appropriate for the 8-year-old. And I started thinking about what she liked to read and what I liked to read when I was a kid. And for me, it happened to be fantasy. I always enjoyed books that took me somewhere I couldn't go on my own. And I started writing what was supposed to be a short story. And Christmas Eve rolled around. I sat down with my two daughters, my wife, read this, what was then a very short story to them. And when I was done, they said, "Dad, that's terrific. That's great. But what happens next?" And I said, "Gee, I don't know. I ran out of time." And they said, "You better figure it out, because you can't just start something like that and then leave us hanging." So that's what I did. I just started writing a story for their benefit, just to entertain them, with no inclination of ever getting it published. And it took me about 3 months. I wrote one chapter every week. Didn't worry about making it perfect. Just I had this hungry audience that wanted to know what would happen next. So that's what I did. And after 3 months went by, I had this novel called The Luck Uglies. And long story short, that was ultimately the book that was sort of my breakthrough. And a little publisher called HarperCollins bought that book, as well as two more I hadn't even written yet. And that allowed me to sort of jump into doing what I've always wanted to do.
And now you have this 3-book series, the Luck Ugly series. Tell me if I'm reading too much into this, Paul, but it seems like the books are in some ways very political, and I don't mean Democratic, Republican mm-hmm. kind of political, but I mean in some circumstances, in some of the storylines, the villain is the government, or the villain is law enforcement, incompetent or unaware of what's going on. And in that way, I don't know, it seems like you're making your young readers aware of the way government can fail. Disney has done this too, of course. It's nothing new for children. What makes government such a good villain?
I think authority makes a good villain. So I think maybe that's part of it. I think you're right. There is a lot of the authority figures in this book turn out to be not so nice, right? Some of the biggest villains aren't the monsters or the so-called outlaws or the people labeled outlaws. It's actually the ones doing the labeling. And for me, I think it's really interesting. I think kids should be, encouraged. I think it's important for kids to question authority. You know, sometimes kids who ask questions or question authority are stifled, and they say, "Oh, that's rude, don't do that." And I happen to think that, it's important to question authority. You can do it politely, you can do it respectfully, but those are important lessons to learn. So I think authority figures make great villains. I think respect is something that adults should earn, and I think that's important for kids to realize that. So yeah, but I don't think you're reading too much into it. I think there definitely is a little bit of political commentary in there.
Though the parents, I should say, are authority figures who seem the most benevolent here.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, in fact, the parents are very much. I don't know if calling them counterculture would be the right way, but they are ones who encourage a healthy dose of rebellion in their own kids. And again, I think that's important. One of the things that was interesting to me in writing this book was kids fantasy literature, for a lot of good reasons, orphans tend to play a very big role. There are a lot of books that feature orphans, and there are literary reasons why that's convenient and why it's useful. But in fantasy, there's not a lot of families, and I really wanted to explore the dynamic of families. You know, in real life, I don't encounter too many orphans. I don't encounter too many people who don't have any parents. But I do encounter a lot of kids who come from, you know, single parent homes, or they come from, their products of divorce. And even though The Luck Uglies is a fantasy setting, I wanted to write a book where there was an absentee father. And in effect, there's a single mother with two young daughters trying to make their way in this village drowning, which is not always such a nice place. It's not always particularly nice or friendly for women and girls. And I thought that was important, too, because even though it's fantasy, it's something hopefully that kids today can relate to.
So who were you reading as a kid?
So when I was a kid, I had a lot of favorites. And I still read books for kids, by the way. So that hasn't exactly changed.
Is it for pleasure or market research or both?
It's a combination of both. But ultimately, you know, I think some of the best books out there are middle grade books, books for middle readers. Really terrific stuff that stands the test of time. When I was a kid, they're considered classics, but The Chronicles of Prydain was a fantasy series that was one of my favorites by an author named Lloyd Alexander, who sometimes... you don't hear about him as often as you hear about, you know, Lord of the Rings and Narnia and those types of books, but just really wonderful, wonderful stuff that stuck with me. I'm always looking for terrific writers that really speak to me and inspire me to work harder and be a better writer myself.
Let's talk about that work, the work of being a writer. You do a significant amount of marketing for your work. It's sort of comes with the territory for writers these days. Break it down for me by percentage. What percentage of your job as a writer is actual writing, and which percentage is marketing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And although it varies from time to time, I would say it's at least 50-50. 50% of the time writing, 50% of the time marketing or promoting in some way. And sometimes, depending on the season, it's even more on the marketing side. So, for example, after a book comes out, after a book's published in the, you know, say in the spring, between school visits, between podcasting, which I do, between, you know, reaching out, coordinating visits, it's more than 50, you know, more than half my time is spent just doing some sort of marketing to get the books out there, to get myself out there.
And is that necessary, do you think, or do you just like going above and beyond?
I don't know that I go above and beyond. I bet if you talk to a lot of authors, that they're working just as hard, if not harder, than I am. But the answer is, I enjoy it. I like doing it. But I think it is necessary, particularly in the children's market, because there's so many authors out there. There are so many great authors who never get discovered, that you really have, between social media, between getting the gatekeepers to know you. Because when we write, if you figure for 8 to 12 year olds, more often than not, they're not picking out the books for themselves. Somebody has to expose them to those books, and those are the children's librarians, the school librarians, teachers, parents. Oftentimes, they're the ones who introduce their kids to good books. So they're just as important to market to as the kids themselves. But I love it. I mean, there's nothing better than going to a school and hanging out with 200 or 300 or 50 fifth graders. It's just awesome. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Okay, and I have to ask, tell us about your writing studio.
So my writing studio, I often joke, I have in my bio that I write in an abandoned chicken coop, which is actually true. It sounds ridiculous, but it's true. Now, this was a very glamorous chicken coop. It was must have been the Ritz-Carlton of chicken coops. It was hand-built by the people who lived in the house before me. Okay. It was really more like an 8-by-10-foot shed, but it was very nice. And there were chickens who inhabited this coop before we moved in. But when we moved in, I still had a daughter in diapers at the time. And I said, you know, nothing against chickens, but the last thing I want to do is clean up after chickens. I still have a daughter in diapers. So it was just vacant for a while. And I had always wanted just a serene writing space sort of tucked back in the woods. And I had the guy who does work around my house came in and basically, you know, tricked it out. I mean, I designed it, turned it into my writing studio. And it's like this rustic, just wonderful, everything I've ever dreamed of writing. It has heat, so it's warm and nice in the wintertime.
And how did you trick it out?
Okay, so when I say trick it, it's not your fancy man cave. So I don't have flat screen TVs.
Gotcha.
It's all white pine paneling inside, so it still has like a cedary wood smell to it. I sort of put those wide pine flooring down, so it looks almost like an old New England tavern. I have an old piece of huge thick salvaged barn wood. That's my desk. So everything in there is just very natural, and just it sort of blends in with the woods around it. So when I say trick it out, I don't mean it's very high, particularly high tech. I do get spotty wireless out there from the house sometimes. But yeah, that's my spot. And I just put art around things that inspire me to write.
Well, fantastic. Paul, thank you very much for coming in and speaking about your series.
It was my pleasure, Peter. Thank you.
That's Paul Durham. He's the author of the series The Luck Uglies. And the latest book in the series came out this year. It's called Rise of the Ragged Clover. And you can learn more about Paul and find a list of his top five reading recommendations at our website, nhpr.org. And we're coming up on the New Hampshire Poetry Festival on September 24th in Manchester. So let's hear some recommendations of poetry between now and then. What poems stun you? Which ones do you share with your friends, loved ones? Write to us. Our email address is books@nhpr.org. You can also tweet at @nhprbookshelf. And hey, bonus points if you can send a double dactyl. Gotta love those. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.